Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Hardworking and dependable. Test drive a Silverado at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
Colin McShane joins us now from News Nation. You can watch him starting at 2 o'clock this afternoon everywhere. Hey, Colin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John.
Maybe we should do a News Nation WGN Radio branded bourbon. Doesn't that sound yummy?
That could have potential. That could have potential. So, if you're into it, we'll figure something out.
So that means you're not into it. Okay, fair enough. Doesn't have to be. It was just my idea. So can you walk me through some of the Senate votes? And one in particular has got me scratching my head. It sounds like they did pass this immigration funding, this ICE funding bill that the president wanted. But then embedded in that, it appears, was the $1.76 billion. So is that still on the table? Walk me through all of that.
Well, my understanding was $70 billion total in immigration, $38.5 billion for ICE, $26 billion Customs and Border Enforcement. And the big thing that was being argued about, at least at the end of this point, was the anti-weaponization fund language, because that became so controversial that there would be some sort of an outright ban kind of embedded in the bill. But that didn't happen. Now, the other thing before that, is that what you're talking about, the ballroom funding?
Well, actually, no, I'm interested. So
that's not in there.
Oh, it is not. So ballroom funding is not in there. But the $1.776 billion weaponization slush fund is still in there.
For the money. So it's not in there explicitly. I think the argument was whether it would be explicitly banned. In other words, the Democrats wanted to embed in the bill something that would say that there's no way this fund can, you know, be a thing, that it can come to fruition.
Sure.
And they tried to get in there that kind of language, and the Republicans, you know, had the votes to block them, so they weren't able to do that. Now, when you say it's in there, I don't believe it's explicitly in there either. What we're going on is that the word of the acting, maybe soon to be full-time AG if he's confirmed, which is another story altogether, Todd Blanche, testifying that they're not proceeding with that fund, period, is going to have to be enough.
Okay.
So there's no explicit ban.
So fair enough, but which they could have done. But it also appears that that's almost a moot point because Blanche, via the president, has said that they're not going to go forward with it. The pushback was so great, they said, we're not going to do it now after all. It's weird. They don't normally put their finger to the wind. Maybe they did. But where the Senate had a chance to, in fact, ensure that that cannot happen, the Senate took a pass on that. It could still happen if the administration changes its mind.
Yeah, the administration, meaning the president, which he sounded like he was the other day, which is what got people worked up, because he said, you know, I love this this thing, this fund. And then when he was asked again, he was asked two or three times in the one appearance, he said, I'm going to have to check with the lawyers. But the last official word we had from an administration official on it was the testimony on Capitol Hill from Todd Blanche when he said that it's dead, you know, that we're not proceeding with the fund, period, which was the actual quote. So that's what they're going on. The Republicans took that as enough to say we don't need to outright ban it and write language in that bans it. We'll go on the idea that it's effectively dead, and we'll move forward with this bill and get it passed, you know, with the other funding we want, which is the immigration funding. So they didn't get the ballroom funding. The anti-weaponization fund is not in the bill, but it's also not out of the bill.
Yeah.
But they got their immigration funding, 70-plus billion.
And they did not get, the Democrats were not able to secure some of the exclusions or protections that they wanted, that ICE agents would have to not wear masks, they would have to identify themselves. It's a laundry list of things that I thought were reasonable and which actually unfunded the government for a while. The Republicans were able to get what they wanted on this. None of those carve-outs are in this bill.
I think that's a good point, and that at the end of the day, this was, especially in the context of what's been happening over the last, you know, week to 10 days, a win for the administration, all things considered, because the narrative that's been kind of coming on, we talked about it actually a lot on our show, is that the Republicans for the first time are starting to sound like they're ready to stand up to the president on certain issues. Even on the war powers vote in the House the other night, he lost for Republicans. The anti-weaponization fund, I think, is an example. The Bill Pulte, as acting DNI, at least in public, which is all they can do. Some have spoken out against that. But here, Republicans show that they're still in the majority, right? It's a slim majority, which is why all those other stories matter so much, because, you know, they might not get it done all the time. But they basically got the most they could hope for, given the context of the politics right now. Unpopular president, slim majority, vulnerable Republicans in the midterms. They were still able to get the funding for immigration the way they wanted it.
Put a finer point on the War Powers vote. I mean, if it comes before the president, he's not going to sign it. So
no.
Maybe there's no teeth to this thing. But if you want Congress to do its job, that's its job to sound off on this. And what they wanted to do was say that the war has to end or that it needs congressional approval. And that did pass, did it not?
Yeah, normally, that's right, in the House. And normally I'm of the mind, I've talked about this a lot over the years, what's the point of having votes if they're not going to lead to anything, and Congress does way too much of that. I do think, to your point, that this time is a little bit different, because there's been a real frustration in the country that the process hasn't even been working, that the Congress has been absent, that they haven't been stepping up to do their jobs. And I think we've had a couple of examples over the last week or so where they have, and the process is playing out. So this is the process. So they said, all right, you need to pull the troops home and end the hostilities in Iran. Okay, well, the Senate conceivably could say the same thing. The president then could veto that. That's the process. That's the process that we have in place for our system. And then it could go back to the Congress, and if they had a two-thirds majority, they could override his veto in both houses. They won't, but that's the process. With the anti-weaponization fund, he tried to slip this thing through, maybe thinking that nobody in his team, so to speak, would object. But they did. They had the acting attorney general up first behind closed doors and then in public testimony, and they pushed back. And the pushback, well, it looks like it worked and that they pulled the fund. Now, we'll see if they follow through on that. I mean, I think your points are fair on that. We have to make sure that that actually happens. But my point is that the process, which we've been so critical of or skeptical of for good reason, I think, over the last couple of years, over the last week or so, we've seen, you know, the process playing out the way it's supposed to.
Well, I think everybody can and should have an opinion about these things, particularly members of Congress. And
yeah,
if they're not called upon to vote on it, I still think they should sound off. Have the courage of your convictions. Now, when it did come up to a vote in the House, four or five Republicans left the party, voted with the Democrats, but just four or five. So the rest were not on that page. And that's seen as some larger signal to Donald Trump. I don't know how big that signal is.
I also don't know how many profiles and courage we're actually seeing in the Congress right now. That happened earlier. The people who were speaking up and willing to lose their job already spoke up, and many of them did lose their job. Now, as we get through the primaries, I think we're seeing a dynamic shift where people's incentives are actually, in some cases, like to Congressman Fitzpatrick, Republican Pennsylvania in the House, are shifting. In other words, they now, if they're going to keep their jobs, might have to speak out against the president in some cases. So at the end of the day, incentives usually drive the day on Capitol Hill, and they did in one way before the primaries, midterm primaries, and now after the primaries, we may see a little bit in the other direction. We'll see.
Speaking of losing or keeping your job, Connell, just give me 60 seconds. It's all the time I have left. Say whatever you want about Scott Pelley in 60 Minutes. And it's interesting that there was actually chatter yesterday about whether or not Joe Rogan would join the 60 Minutes team in some capacity. And this from Brian Stelter. As far as the virality of the claim, Variety's Brian Steinberg nailed it. Quote, the very idea of Joe Rogan getting a spot in the talent lineup at 60 Minutes is silly, but the fact that reporters are calling CBS News for comment on it is not. And it's a signal of how the show's brand can be weakened by public spectacle. What do you say about Pelley's dismissal?
I mean, I have a lot of respect for the work he's done over the years. I don't know him personally, and I definitely don't know enough about what's going on inside of CBS to comment in any kind of like informed way about it. From personal experience, I would say, you know, we all have a boss, and we've all had bosses that we agree with, some that we disagree with. And at times when you get to a point where you can't represent the brand of the organization that you work for, well, you got to find a new organization. I went through that myself at Fox after the 2020 election. played that out in a way that I felt comfortable with, that I could contribute by reporting in the field on issues I thought were important until my contract ran out. And when it ran out on that day, I walked out and left because that was a decision that I made. But I think it all plays out differently in different ways. I mean, I probably wouldn't have chosen to do it the way that Pelly did in terms of in a meeting like that. But at the same time, I guess part of me understands that he wanted to make a point. But again, I just don't know what's going on internally. I do know kind of what I had to deal with in my own career, and many people do, not just in our industry. We all have bosses. We have to, figure out whether we can work with them. And at some point when we can't, then you part ways. So that's kind of how I see it.
I was a little surprised on a podcast I host here called The Mincing Rascals, which features a bunch of journalists and commentators in the Chicago area. And the podcast leans left, but there were plenty in that group that said, yeah, you get fired. you can't do that to the new boss. And maybe he wanted to get fired. I wonder how many people have taken the opportunity to do that fantasy, scream at the boss in front of everybody, and then quit. Jerry Maguire the thing. And Pelly did that. Well, yep. I'm glad that you're on News Nation as an anchor. News Nation Live with Connell McShane, 2:00 this afternoon on Comcast, DirecTV, Dish Network, and so on. Nice to talk to you, Connell.
All right, you too, John.